I've been doing career counseling for the last 6 years, both at a college level and in the junior high school. Talked to a lot of people wondering what they want to do, and I don't think you should view me as someone who's going to give you all the answers. I'll give you some ideas on how you might want to start looking at answering some of these questions. And two books that I found really helpful I wanted to mention to you. Are either any of you familiar with these two books, What Color's Your Parachute? And the title for this session, if you don't know where you're going. They're both in the library here at Holden, and they're both very excellent books to get you thinking about your future. This one is written by a man who taught at the University of Minnesota, and he starts out with a passage from Alice in Wonderland, where Alice is asking the Cheshire Puss, "Would you tell me, please, which way I ought to go from here?" "That depends a good deal on where you want to get to," said the cat. "I don't much care where," said Alice. "Then it doesn't matter which way you go," said the cat. "So long as I get somewhere," Alice added as an explanation. "Oh, you're sure to do that," said the cat, "if only you walk long enough." A lot of us feel like that sometimes. We really aren't sure where we want to go. We're just sort of drifting along, hoping that the right job or the right person will somehow fall into our life. What I've found in working with people, and Campbell would agree, that most of us, what we want out of life is the opportunity to make choices. We don't want to be in a job that's a dead-end place, or we don't want to feel that we don't have any opportunities available to us. And when planning, then, you should plan in such a way to create as many opportunities, as many options as possible for your life. Well, how to start? One elementary way, of course, is to set goals for yourself. But they can't be real vague, like I want a good job, or I want success, or I want to earn a lot of money. The reason those type of goals aren't very helpful is that they're fixed, and you change, and life changes. Life is static, and they're too vague. Also, it implies that a good job is out there, that once you find the good job, you're going to be happy. And it just doesn't work that way, that you may find a job that you like, but if you're like the average, most Americans will change jobs maybe 6-7 times, I think, is the average during their lifetime. So you have to think there isn't one good job waiting out there, and you hope to find it. There's probably a lot. Do you all know the distinction between job and career? You have a number of different jobs within your career. And in thinking about your life's work, your life's mission, you can have a broad career, let's say, within the field of education. You can have a number of specific jobs within this career. But life is sort of an ongoing career. Coming to Holden is part of your career. Being a student is part of a career. Being a housewife is part of a career. It's part of defining and developing who you are as a person. I'd like you to think of life in this way. Instead of having endings or something, a specific goal, a good job out there, think of life as being a never-ending pathway. And I asked you to bring a pencil and something to write on because I'd like to start us off with an exercise that you may find helpful. On your paper, just draw a line like this, and on one end write BC, which stands for Begin Career, and on the other end write EC, which stands for End Career. The line represents your life, your lifestyle. And I'd like you to put an X where you think you are in this progression from when you began your career to when you feel you'll end your career. Now, if you're younger, you may put yourself closer down here. If you're older, you may be down here. If you are fatalistic and feel you're going to die in 10 years, you might feel you're out here. But the first point is to locate yourself on this continuum. Once you've put an X in there, I'd like you then to either write in or draw in significant people or events or experiences that have helped define you as a person and gotten you to this point in your career. It may be a book you read that had some importance in terms of what you're thinking of doing or what you're now doing in your career. It could be a teacher that you had. It could be traveling to Holden. Whatever it is for you, what are some people or experiences or events that have helped to shape who you are and who you want to become? If they've been positive, put them above the line. If they're negative, something that's been negative that has shifted you, put it below the line. Now, some of you will work quicker than others on this, so I'll go on and tell you what I want you to do secondly. To the right of where you are right now, I'd like you to put down goals that you hope to realize before you end your career. These have gotten you to where you are right now. What are some things you still hope to accomplish, places you still want to visit, relationships you want to have, or specific jobs that you hope to have before you end your career? Okay, any questions on what I'm asking you to do? Okay, take maybe 5 minutes to do that, and then we'll talk a little bit about it.
Could foresee that far down the, I just don't.
Still pretty misty. Okay. Any other reactions?
Career and lifestyle is a real conflict for me, because what I want to do and how I want to live are in constant conflict with each other. And so that's what's hard to draw this line. And on the one hand, it can be almost clear cut in what your goals are career wise, but how you want to live your life is in opposition at times. So that's just difficult.
So that's causing conflict.
Putting it, yeah.
Campbell talks a lot about life as being a never-ending pathway, but that as we go through life, there are side pathways leading off all the way through. And the side pathways represent choices or new directions that we may want to head off in. For instance, let's say you're going along and I heard you say you like working with wood. Let's say you want to...
look at the path. It takes a nice bend right there.
Maybe you want to go into woodworking. Okay? So you take a new direction. You leave the job you currently have and you go working into wood. Now, after a while, maybe you'll have another choice that comes along. That is whether to go with an established firm that has security, or whether you want to try to work with wood on your own and open your own shop, which gives you more freedom and flexibility, but it's also more risky financially. And depending upon which path you decide to go down, that's going to have other ramifications down the road. And this works for all of us. As we go through life, we come upon these decision times, whether it's grad school or whether it's job one, job two, whatever, and depending upon which direction we decide to go, if we decide to go, it's going to change your life. And that's why there isn't one good job out there, because there are too many factors that happen. Now, as you're going along, each of these side pathways have a gate on them. Some of these side pathways are closed to all of us. We can't go down them. This side pathway, which is to work with wood, is closed to me because I'm not interested in it. I'm not good at it. I don't have the credentials or the assets to go down that path. To become a doctor, that's closed to me because of age. Well, although I could go back to school, and because of interest, and I get faint when I'm around blood. I mean, that's close to me. To become a concert pianist, that was closed back at about age 5. There's only one person in here who could become a concert pianist, and she'd have to start right away, or to become a gymnast, or to become an Olympic athlete. Some things have already passed us by. There are other options that aren't going to be realized until we're a little older. But the point is that life is a never-ending pathway, and I believe that, with no perfect ending out there like we see on TV and in the movies. It just, you know, once we've reached one goal, we set other ones, and we just keep on going. And there are a number of assets. Now, what opens the gates? What's going to allow us to go down? There are two things. One, whether we want to or not, we can choose whether we want to change our lifestyle and try this route. But then secondly, do we have the right credentials to go down that route? If we choose to go down that route, can we make it because of proper credentials? And I want to talk a little bit about what factors open the pathways for us. Because even though you don't know specifically what you want to do next year or 5 years or 20 years down the road, there are things you can be doing right now to develop your assets so that you'll have the option to go down as many paths as you want down the road. Does that make sense to you? Okay. I'll mention 10 assets that will help develop yourself even right now, even though you might not know specifically what it is you want to do next year. One are talents and skills. Talents, people say, are God-given. Skills are areas that we can develop. We can work on developing our skills. If you have a skill and you can find someone who will pay you to teach it or to do it, that's ideal. If you can get paid to do something you like and that you're good at, chances are you might be very happy at it. If you're skilled at working with wood and someone can pay you to work with wood, chances are that might be a good job. And so skills, what are your skills? Everybody in here has certain skills or talents that are different than the next person. And you have to, that's a starting point. What are your skills? How can you develop your skills to open as many gates and pathways as possible? Another thing that opens pathways, I mentioned it briefly, was your age. For some gates to be broken down, we just have to be a certain age. And at the same time, if we're too old, we've passed by some of the gates. We made decisions, or people made decisions for us early in life, and it's very hard for us to ever go back and to go off in those directions. Okay, a third pathway, thing that opens gates, is your intelligence. Some people are smarter than others, have more intelligence than others. If you were blessed with that, that may open pathways for you that won't for the next person. Although intelligence by itself isn't going to do it. You have to use your intelligence. You also have to seek out good teachers or good coaches. And if you aren't motivated, if you're very smart but you aren't motivated, you know, you're not going to have as many options open to you either. But if you are an intelligent person, that helps. A fourth factor is motivation. Someone that's motivated, persistent, is going to get ahead and create options for himself. Another thing that I think is important is in choosing where you want to work, if you can be around people that will encourage you to be the best that you can be, who can support you and you feel enthusiastic being, you know, there, that's extremely important. There's nothing worse, I think, than being in a job that you don't like the people you work with or you don't like what you're doing. Some people get caught in that. And so they keep doing the same work that is dehumanizing. And it isn't good for them, it isn't good for the people they work with. And some environments seem to bring that out. And so the motivation and trying to choose work settings that will help bring out the best that's in you are very important. A fifth asset would be your friends. they're extremely important. They influence your attitudes, your actions, your behaviors. For the last 10 years, I worked primarily with junior high age kids, and that's the most prevalent time for being influenced by peers and by friends. And if you're with good friends, I'll put value judgments on good and bad. If you're with good friends, it's going to influence your development and create options for you much differently than if you end up with bad friends. I think that's maybe a very obvious point, but something we often overlook. And the same with later life. When you're in college, the friends you choose do influence your attitudes, your behavior, your actions. When you're older, the type of friends you're with, the type of jobs you go into, the friends are often related, they continue to influence you. And so choose your friends wisely, I guess, is the bottom line here, because your friends will help you to open up some of these gates. A sixth factor is your education. This is important because it helps improve some of the other assets that I've talked about and will be mentioning. If at all possible, you should try to go to get the best education you can. I guess most people here have already graduated, but it does help to have graduated from a school with a good reputation or a good department in your area than a school that isn't as well known or doesn't have the same reputation. It's just going to create, it's going to improve your credentials, improve your assets. A seventh asset is your family. You can use your family to open doors. Sometimes skills are passed down from generation to generation. Your family during your formative years provides experiences through travel and literature that's in the home. And so the family too can certainly be a factor in creating assets for you. An eighth factor are the experiences you have. Coming to Holden is an experience. Other experiences that you have help develop you as a person and are all part, ingredients that you're adding to your repertoire as you journey down this path. And the last two, nine, is your appearance. Some people say that's kind of a given, there's not much I can do about it, but there is. It is an asset, your appearance, and if you're overweight, you can lose weight, so you have a more attractive appearance. If you wear glasses and you don't like that, you can get contacts. There's just so many things you can do about your appearance, and that is an asset in the job market. You can't do anything about how tall you are, I guess. I'm short, and there's nothing I can do about that. I suppose I can get elevator shoes or something, and ladies can wear high heels, but there are things that we can do to improve our appearance, and that's certainly an asset, and it does open doors. And finally, your health. All the other nine really are meaningless if you aren't healthy. You can be very smart, you can have good friends, and you can have a good family, and all the other things I've mentioned, but if you're sick all the time, most of the doors are going to be closed. So it's extremely important that you take good care of yourself and are healthy. Okay, those are 10 factors that can open doors, can open these gates. And there's things that you can be working on developing now, even though you don't know for sure what specifically you want to do in terms of a job. Okay, any questions or comments on those 10 factors that open gates? Yes?
You were speaking of your choice of friends. Maybe that's one of the reasons that parents particularly like to see your children with friends maybe more of their choosing than of the child's choosing, because perhaps they've seen that through experience that it is important when you run around with your kid.
Sure. It is.
But that's very difficult to convince and hard to keep your fingers out of the situation when you see them perhaps making a choice you think is wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. It's one of the most difficult aspects of parenting.
I mean, I have children that are getting to be 8, 10, and...
Well, they say you can look at the parents of the kids. Okay. Now, what we've done so far is just sort of a general introduction into kind of this whole concept of career planning. And I had you do an exercise just to get into it. Let me talk a little bit now about job hunting. First, the system as it currently seems to exist, and then a more creative way to go about choosing a career and getting jobs. The system, the job hunting system right now is a big gamble. It's called systematic job search, and it is risky. Often it takes luck to get a job, and Bowles in his book calls it the numbers game. Here's how it works. If you're hunting for a job, you like to be able to have maybe 2 or 3 offers, right? So that you have a choice, getting back to my opening statement. So you like to have 2 or 3 offers. Now, to get 2 or 3 offers, you have to have at least 6 interviews, because very seldom do you get an offer for every interview. Now, to get those 6 interviews, you have to send out about 100 resumes. Okay? In fact, most people say 200. The national average, and a lot of surveys have been done, is that for every 100 resumes you send out, you get 3 invitations to interview. Okay, so if you want 6 interviews so that you can have 2 or 3 job offers, you're looking at 200 resumes to get sent out. Okay, this is the numbers game now. Now, if you want to play this game, every college has a placement bureau. The State Department in most states have an employment bureau. There are private agencies. You can read the newspaper for want ads. I've been on a lot of selection committees on the other end. I've been on both ends. And on the selection committee, there have been some jobs where we've had 200 applications for the one job. Now, that's not very unusual. For some jobs, it's 500-600. Now, if you were sitting on a selection committee and you get 300 job applications for one job, you can imagine what the chances are of any one of you being, the 5 or 6 people that are called to interview out of those 500, right? I mean, the odds are very slim that it's going to happen. And yet, all of us play that. I've played it, many of you have played it, and sometimes you get hired. I've had 5 full-time jobs, discounting summer and part-time things. I've never yet gotten a job this way. And I'm an expert at creating resumes and cover letters. I teach it. I've done it for 6 years. I know how to play the game very smoothly, but it's never worked. What I did for a resume, I had it printed up. I didn't have one here. I thought I'd send it. I did bring my wife's as another type of example. This is sort of the standard thing where you'll put down your education and then the dates, where you went to school and the degree. Well, this is experience. She starts with experience. In a resume, you have experience and education. Depending upon which one's more impressive, that's how you start. If you have a lot of good degrees, you start with education, and not much experience, you have that second. So it depends on which one's most impressive. Well, experience, and then, that took up the whole first page. And then she has education, background, travel experience, community involvement, interests, personal, and references. And it's all organized. She's underlined her key job titles, or in the education section, the degree that she got, so that an employer, in looking at this, he'd scan it. See, if you're getting 300 of these, some, you look at it, and if there are misspellings, or if you've used liquid paper and it ran, he doesn't even bother with it. I mean, it's gone right away. It goes in the circular file. because he has 300, you know, to read. And so he doesn't even want to bother with a sloppy application because it's a reflection on person. Sloppy resume, sloppy cover letter, sloppy person. I don't need that type of individual in my school, in my company. So this little document here, resume, has to be well done, well organized. Certain things leap out at the person when he reads it. Can be no misspellings, and just has to be perfect. Now the one I did, this is a poor example, I suppose, but it was in a brown paper, and I used an 8x11, but I folded it over like this, and on the front it wasn't a picture. It was more like a sketch of me, so you couldn't really see what I looked like, just kind of a little bit, you know. And then in Old English, printing was resume and my name and then my address. And you open it up, and I had on this side my experience, the dates, the place, the title of my job, and a description. And when you're writing your resume, you want to have action words like organized, blah, 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 supervised, in charge of, not, you know, don't make it just sterile, but showing that these were skills or duties that that you had in charge of is good. Kind of action words. And then over here was education. Same thing, the place, degree, and any honors or extracurricular activities. And then in the back, I had the same thing, the travel and the hobbies, personal information, background. Now, then I had envelopes this size, so I'd slip it in. So when they got this, it was not folded, it wasn't stapled, it was in heavy brown paper, and I had it professionally printed, and I did it three different times. Now, first time I did it, I sent it to Yale Placement Bureau, where I'd gone to school. And they sent it back to me, and they said, it's real nice done, but you had two typo errors. Czechoslovakia and Australia. My typist had changed the I and the A around. He said, I'm sorry, but you're going to have to do the whole thing over. And I made like 500 copies, because I was all fired up, you know, to just blanket the world with my resume. I had to do it all over. And, you know, it only cost about $30, $40, but... it wasn't acceptable. Also a good way to organize what you've done, and because a resume is basically selling what? Or who? Yourself. Sure. If you don't have a resume, you won't get an interview. And if you don't get the interview, you don't get a job. And that's pretty elementary. Okay, in a cover letter, which usually accompanies a resume, there's usually three parts. Why you're writing. If you've seen the job in an ad, you say, you know, I'm responding to the ad I saw in Journal of Higher Education for this position opening, blah, blah, blah. I'm very interested in working there. And you explain very briefly something about your education or your experience that would fit what they're looking for, and then you conclude by either requesting more information or asking for an interview. Now, if you're going to send out 200 cover letters or 200 resumes, the cover letter is pretty standard, and you just substitute in the job title that you're applying for and the you know, the person and the school that you're applying to. Education. So you kind of have a standard letter that you just keep putting out again and again and again. Now if you get the interview, then of course the standard nuts and bolts things of being on time and dressing right, and also if possible finding out something about that school system or that business. So you're not going in there cold. It impresses whoever is hiring you if you know a little bit about that place or that community, and so you can ask some intelligent questions. That's going to put you a step above the other 100, the other 10 people that God invited to interview. So if we have 300 resumes coming in, they're going to select between 6 and 10 people they want to interview. If you're one of the 6 or 10 they want to interview, realize that the selection committee will recommend maybe 2 to the person that makes the final decision. And then he'll decide whether it's going to be you or the next person. Okay, that's the way the current job hunting system works in this country, basically. And it's called the numbers game. We've all probably played it. Some of us have maybe gotten jobs that way. A lot of us have been disappointed. The reason I mention it is because you have to realize the odds of getting a job through the numbers game are limited. And so you shouldn't be too discouraged if you don't get a job this way. And I've talked to some people that have been unemployed for 2 years because this is the only method they know. And the only ads or the only jobs they go after are the ones that are advertised in newspapers and through college placement bureaus. You got to realize there are thousands of people that are reading the same ads you're reading, and they're all sending off their resumes. And just the volume of the stuff that comes into these hiring, you know, the people that are hiring, is overwhelming. And so unless you have a slick resume, perfect, and a good cover letter, and of course the experience and the credentials to open that gate, you know, you don't stand a chance. Okay, so that's basic. Okay, Bowles talks about a new way to go at it. There are 3 steps, and I would encourage you who are wondering now to take this serious. One is, you must decide just exactly what you want to do. Now that seems obvious, but a lot of us haven't really grappled with that. What is it? What's the one thing you really want to do? That's the first step. And maybe you can answer right now off the top of your head. Maybe you got to think about it for 2 weeks. Maybe it's going to take you all summer grappling with that. What is it that you really want to do with your life? First step. Second step, decide just exactly where you want to do it. You want to do it in Minnesota, you want to do it in Washington, you want to do it in a public school, you want to do it in a private school, you want to do it at the college level, you want to do it in business. You know, where exactly do you want to do this thing that you want to do in step number one? And then the third step is to research the organization or the business that interests you at great length. And then approach the one person in the organization that has the power to hire you and convince him that you're the person for the job. Now some people can create jobs. Some of you know that I'm just between career shifts myself, and the job I'm going into, in a sense, I created. It wasn't there before. And the job I'm leaving that I've been doing for 6 years, I created that. That wasn't there before. And in fact, the job before that, the last 3 jobs I've had weren't there before I came. And I've been doing basically something that I really wanted to do. So once you know what you want to do and where you want to do it, then you find out an organization, school, business, research it and decide, is this where I want to do it? And if so, find out who can hire you, go in and convince them you're the person to do what has to be done in that organization. Okay. Any questions on those 3 key steps?
What would help somebody to make that exact decision? Are there any helps that, you know, that can help you get a grasp of what your options are, you know, and narrowing them down?
Which step? What you
first
want to do?
Yeah, making that exact decision.
Well, people say, you know, what do you like to do? What are you good at? But I'd also say to you, it's probably going to change. I mean, how you answer it now, and if you follow these 3 steps, you may land yourself a job, but 3 years later, you've changed, and the job may have changed or may not have changed, and you're going to go through the whole thing again. The point is that this isn't a once-in-a-lifetime process. We're all going to go through this thing 5-6 times, probably. We can either go through it 5 or 6 times with a numbers game, or we can go through it 5 or 6 times with this process that he's talking about, which I rather like, and find it more effective, I guess. Yeah, there are some exercises, too, he has in the book. And if we have time, we may do one or two of them, even in here. Okay, any other comments on these three key steps?
How did you go in and create the job?
Okay, with the last one, it was with a hospital system who was interested in health promotion, and I'm very interested in health promotion, and last year I'd started my own private consulting firm with employees numbering one, me. And I printed up a brochure, and I sent it out, and I started doing some things in the area of health promotion just because I was interested in it. And because of that, this larger organization that owns and operates 200 hospitals got interested in what I was doing because they were interested in it, and I came in and became director of programs. Now, that job was never advertised. It never hit the job market because I knew they were interested in it, I'd been doing something in it, and I got to them before they sent it out all over the country, and they had 300 people applying for the job, some who probably had much better qualifications, PhD in health promotion or whatever, So some of it's luck, some of it's timing, but some of it's just knowing what you're good at, what you want to do, where you want to do it, and then go finding the three steps, finding the person that can hire you, and convincing him, you have a need, and I can solve your problem, and I want to work for you.
On one of those steps about seeking out the person who has the power to hire, none of the jobs that I've had have been gotten through the numbers game. Don't ask me why, but it had something to do with the fact that I knew some people or they knew me.
Yes.
I was not out selling myself to them. I really wasn't.
Yeah.
But there were other people who recommended me for the jobs, which I got. And it says a lot to me about people are watching you all the time wherever you are. I guess I wasn't even quite aware of how much they were. And know that you're there.
Yeah.
And the idea of selling yourself by what you do, with your life, I think is a really important factor.
That's right.
Now that doesn't mean you go around, bragging to everybody about which one, but just by what you do and the way you conduct yourself apparently has some influence.
Yeah, it's extremely important.
What,
I don't know what the percentages are, but I would my guesstimate would be maybe 80% of all jobs are filled internally, in other words, shifting around within an organization.
The last job I had was not even advertised.
Yeah, yeah, or laterally.
Within a public school.
Yeah, maybe only 10 to 20% at the most are ever filled through the classified ads.
And there was another proof of that. We just this last year had several administrators to be replaced within a sizable school district in Iowa. And they had all kinds of applicants, for both the high school principal's job and the superintendency's job. And among all those that were screened down to two, it was the man who was already in the system,
sure,
who was hired for the job.
Yeah, that just happened in Minneapolis now, too. They hired the first black superintendent, he'd been in the system. Yeah.
They just didn't want to risk bringing in a new person in that kind of situation.
Now, these three steps, what do you want to do? Where do you want to do it? What does that organization need? And who's the person that hires? Sounds like a lot of work, and it is. It's not always simple to answer that question, but it's the key. You have to do it. It's the first step. If you don't know what you really want to do for now, you aren't going to know where you're going. Okay? If you don't know where you want to do it, that's the second thing. All three of these steps are extremely important. Otherwise, you're just sort of hoping that something lands in your lap, and sometimes it does. Sometimes good things happen, they work out really well. And you end up in a job you do the rest of your life till you retire and get your 25-year gold watch and things like that. But for most of us, we're going to go through this, like I say, the average is 7 times. And rather than be threatened and worried about it, view it instead as an opportunity for growth, and that that a shift is going to create more opportunities and open new pathways for you that you can't even realize. When I started that little consulting thing, I had no idea where it would lead. And the job I'm going back to, I have no idea where it's going to lead, but I know it's going to lead somewhere. I know 5 years from now, the chances that I'm still director programs is small. I'm sure I'll be going on to something else, and that's the way it's going to go. That this job's going to open up new pathways for me. So the main thing is just to get in there and do it, and then let it explode, and it does. For those of you that are unemployed, well, let me talk about what's going to put you ahead or hold you back. There are four that are mentioned. One is motivation. If you're currently unemployed, you're probably highly motivated to sit down and figure out what you want to do or to go through those three steps. More motivated than someone that's working and someone that's happy in their job. That's quite obvious. If possible, don't wait until you're unemployed to do this. I've known that I wanted to shift jobs for maybe the last 3 years, but I hadn't found what I really wanted to go into until this last month. And so I stayed with the job and found other things to do, like starting this private firm. Because if you're unemployed, your back is up against the wall, one. Two, your value goes down because the person that's hiring you says, why aren't you working? I mean, if you're working, someone wants you, someone needs you. If you aren't working, some employers say that's a reflection on what type of, you know, why doesn't someone else want you? That's the same philosophy behind why you want two or three job offers. If you can go to one guy and say, I'm considering a job offer over here, and so you have to make up your decision soon, or I'm going to go with this firm. This firm's going to pay me $20,000. I'd really like to work for you, but you're only offering $17,000. You know, if you go to $20,000, I'll go with you. You can use the leverage. I mean, who's in control of your life? These guys out here hiring, or do you have something to say in terms of where you want to work and you know, how much you want to make? And what Bowles is saying is yes. Let's shift this whole job system around. Let's shift the numbers game around. Instead of just being a pawn out there for personnel people and employment agencies, why don't you become creative and put the power back where it belongs, with yourself? You have some leverage too when you go into these places. And if you can have a couple job offers, that's a beautiful option. Because then they know, hey, he must really be a good person because, you know, he's in demand. And I better get him quick before someone else gets him. And that's really nice to have. And if you have the luxury of playing that game while you're still employed and getting a steady paycheck, you know, that's even better. But I realize some people get laid off and they lose their job or they're unemployed. It just happens. But anyway, motivation is one thing that puts you ahead. Second is time. It's worth spending, I think, 2 weeks or 2 months or even 2 years planning a career shift. It's not something you can do overnight because the stakes are very high. If you work a 40-hour week, that comes to 2,000 hours a year, 20,000 hours, 10 years, 40,000 hours. You know, we're talking about thousands and thousands of hours of how you're going to be spending your time. And why not be spending your time doing something you really like? And so it's important to spend 2 weeks grappling with this idea. You know, what do I want to do? You know, it's not going to come one night sitting in the jacuzzi. You may have to think about it and struggle with it all summer. But you got to start at that point. Okay, the third is purpose. What's your life mission? What do you want to accomplish with your life? What's still out there for you to do? And sometimes your work is all tied up in your purpose. Who are you marching to? And finally, your practical tools. And if we had time, two exercises I was going to have us do is, if you could do any kind of job, what would it be? You know, if education, money, schooling, you know, if there weren't any limitations, you could do anything you wanted to do, what would it be? Okay. Now, if you can put a label on that, then the next question, of course, is, what do I still have to do to get to there? Do I have to go back to school? Do I have to develop certain skills? Whatever it might be. Okay, so practical tools. And if you go over to the library and get this book, there are a number of other exercises that get you thinking in terms of what I want to do.
Is that the same author as this?
Yeah. Oh, okay, in finishing up, I heard the bell. Let me just read how Campbell closes, because I think it summarizes a lot of the points I've been trying to make. Sophia Tucker, when asked on her 80th birthday about the secret of achieving a long life, answered, "Keep breathing." A few themes come out through this book. One, you need to have some goals. If you don't know where you're going, you probably will end up somewhere else. Second, select your goals. Selecting your goals is a matter of choosing which direction you want to go. Life is in the running, not in the arriving. Third, the possible directions that you can take will depend almost entirely on the number of assets you have going for you. I mentioned 10. Consequently, to expand your choices, you should be continually cultivating your assets. You will have to take the initiative. As a fellow said, people who want milk should not seat themselves on a stool in the middle of a field in hopes that the cows will back up to them. Fourth, with few exceptions, your achievements will be won gradually, not overnight, and you should proceed accordingly. The Persians had a proverb, "Do little things now, so shall big things come to thee by and by, asking to be done." Fifth, more than any other factor, your job, or more generally your career, is going to determine how you live. Thus, give it a great deal of attention and thought. Think about it. Your job determines your vacations, where you're going to live, what type of a house based on your income, quite often your friends. Your job isn't just what work you do, but it affects your whole entire existence. Thus, give it a great deal of attention and thought. Those in this world who do not work, either by choice or circumstance, do not amount to much. Usually they don't even like themselves. Sixth, basic to everything is health. Take care of your body. It is your instrument of life. With health, you have a chance. Without it, nothing. Finally, have fun. Don't take yourself too seriously. One of your first goals should be to develop a healthy perspective. Laugh a lot. Tear out the last page of this book and tape it to the ceiling so you see it every morning. This says, it says, have fun. Don't take yourself too seriously. Laugh a lot. And then, final page, be glad of life because it gives you the chance to love and to work, to play and to look at the stars.